We have to acknowledge the White House is a coronavirus hotspot right now.
We will talk with VOA's White House Bureau Chief about that. This is Wednesday, October 6th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, the U.S. Secretary of State uses a high-level forum of Asian leaders to denounce China's exploitation, corruption, and coercion. You'll hear about a new way to take the temperature of many people at the same time. Penelope Pulu examines the latest of new black horror films. It is all on today's VOA Asia. President Donald Trump urged Americans not to be afraid of COVID-19 after he returned to the White House Monday evening after 72 hours of hospitalization for the deadly virus. In an apparent show of fitness, he climbed the steps of the south portico of the White House, stood on a balcony where he removed his mask, then walked into the White House where others were awaiting his arrival. Joining us is VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman. The president urged Americans not to be afraid of COVID-19 after he came back to the White House on Monday evening. On the other side of that are the number of people that have been in close contact with the president and other people have come down with the coronavirus. How does that shape up?
Well, a lot of White House staff are concerned. Some of them are teleworking. They have been instructed, if they have any symptoms whatsoever, not to come to the White House. But of course, in normal times, everyone who works at the White House wants to be there. It's the center of power. And the closer you are to the West Wing and the Oval Office, the more there's a demonstration of your own power. So I think a lot of people will have to choose between considering their health and then considering effectively doing their jobs. We have to acknowledge the White House is a coronavirus hotspot right now because of the number of cases that have emanated from there, including that event now about 11 days ago when the president gathered a crowd in the Rose Garden to announce his nominee for the U.S. Supreme Court. A number of people who were at that event have tested positive for the coronavirus. People were not social distancing, most of them not wearing masks, and even at least one journalist who was standing in the back at that event has also tested positive. And then, of course, these people go out in the community and potentially spread the virus further. So a lot of consternation among people in the government of Washington, D.C., and among health professionals across the country about those sort of events. And it remains to be seen, Ira, when the president does get out on the campaign trail again, and he inevitably will before the November 3rd election, will he continue to do these rallies with people bunched together and not wearing masks to the most part, or will they start to resemble more of what Joe Biden has done with these socially distanced circles and very small crowds, something that the president has mocked?
For its part, what is the White House saying, if anything, to hold up its side of the story?
Well, we have to remember people like the press secretary, Kayleigh McEnany, are now on the sidelines because they have the coronavirus themselves. And the few officials that are speaking out are trying to downplay the seriousness of the situation inside the White House. We are also hearing information from media reports that a number of staff who are not officials, such as working in housekeeping, have also become infected with the coronavirus.
The president seems to have continued or even intensified his criticisms of China over the past few weeks. Can you address that?
Well, what the president has continued to do during this election campaign especially is to in a sense, deflect any blame that might be thrown at him about his administration's handling of the pandemic, and say that this is really all China's fault, that China did not prevent this virus from escaping Wuhan and infecting the rest of the world. Of course, a number of his critics, including those in the Biden campaign and the former vice president himself, severely criticized the president for his administration's response to the pandemic, and saying we would not have this many cases now, about 7.5 million, and the number of fatalities approaching 220,000 if they had had a more robust response early on, and just did simple things like telling people to wear masks. And really, this debate is going to continue until November 3rd between Donald Trump and Joe Biden about the response to the coronavirus pandemic and how well the administration handled it.
Steve Herman is VOA's White House Bureau Chief. Steve, stay safe, and thank you for doing this once again.
And you be well too, Ira.
These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. 50 Republican and Democratic senators signed a letter encouraging the U.S. to begin formal talks on a comprehensive trade agreement with Taiwan. Pakistan plants 500 million new trees in a drive against climate change. Indonesian police use water cannon and tear gas Tuesday to disperse protesters rallying against a new jobs law in two cities. Malaysia will impose targeted lockdowns to halt a surge in COVID infections. Taiwan's military has launched aircraft to intercept Chinese planes, more than twice as much as all of last year. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Ira Melman. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo denounced China's exploitation, corruption, and coercion Tuesday as he participated in a high-level forum of Asian leaders that Washington hopes will counter Beijing's growing influence. VOA's Bill Gallo has details from Seoul.
Perhaps it's no big surprise that the U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo slammed China during his one-day visit to Japan on Tuesday. But more important was the setting. The latest meeting of a regional group of Asian countries known as the Quad. Composed of the U.S., India, Australia, and Japan, the Quad isn't quite an alliance. It's more of a series of defense talks. But in recent months, the Trump administration has revitalized the Quad as part of its efforts to more forcefully counter China. In his comments Tuesday, Pompeo took direct aim at the Chinese Communist Party, or CCP.
As partners in this Quad, it is more critical now than ever that we collaborate to protect our people and partners from the CCP's exploitation, corruption, and coercion.
Even by the standards of the Trump administration, that's unusually blunt language. And it's much bolder than the language other Quad members use to describe the group. Japan, Australia, and India all have crucial economic ties with China and frequently downplay the notion the Quad is meant to contain Beijing. Instead, they focus on its positive aspects, such as protecting the rules-based global order. But their role in the Quad has begun to change amid the coronavirus pandemic, which originated in China. Many of China's neighbors say it wasn't forthcoming enough about the virus. They're also concerned about China's increasing aggressiveness. For instance, on China's border with India, recent clashes killed at least 20 Indian soldiers. That's prompting soul searching in India, which has famously refused to choose sides between major powers. Australia, too, is embroiled in a major dispute with China. After it called for an independent investigation into the origins of the coronavirus, China hit back with economic measures. There have also been allegations of increased Chinese domestic interference in Australia, says analyst Andrew O'Neill.
From Australia's perspective, I think there's more appetite among policymakers in Australia to push back against China, partly because largely, I should say, I think because of the perception that the Chinese have become more aggressive in targeting Australia through espionage.
But although U.S. officials say they want to expand the scope and membership of the Quad, analysts don't expect a binding NATO-like military alliance anytime soon. That's because the complex web of competing economic interests and rivalries in Asia makes it difficult for many to choose between the U.S. and China. Even some U.S. allies say the choice doesn't need to be made at all. Asked earlier this month about the idea of joining an expanded Quad, South Korea's foreign minister said she doesn't think it's a good idea. And keep in mind, that's a statement coming from a country that hosts nearly 30,000 U.S. troops. It's a sign that while China's neighbors are getting more frustrated, for now, there may be a limit to how far they'll push back. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
Happening now in Asia, China is in talks to have its locally produced COVID-19 vaccines assessed by the World Health Organization as a step toward making them available for international use, according to a WHO official. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We are very happy you are joining us on VOA Asia. Even though businesses are reopening around the world, the pandemic is still a reality. Many offices are taking people's temperature before they're allowed inside. In some industries, handheld thermometers may not be efficient enough. Thermal imaging systems allow temperatures to be taken without anyone needing to be physically close to the person being evaluated. The demand for these types of devices is skyrocketing globally. VOA's Elizabeth Lee has more.
In this COVID era, many businesses, such as this salon, require guests to first pass a temperature test with something like this before entering.
Temperature's 97.1.
Temperature screening is something that we should do in perpetuity, but we can only do it with automation.
Many businesses that expect heavy foot traffic are looking for COVID deterrent devices that can screen temperatures quicker to get more people through the door efficiently. That's where thermal imaging systems come in, and everyone seems to want one.
Schools, theme parks, sports stadiums.
Although temperature-taking technology does not diagnose disease, and not everyone with COVID-19 has a fever, global demand is skyrocketing.
We were originally shipping, like I said, 10 a month, and we're up to about 100 a day.
Many companies, including Thermal Technics, have developed infrared cameras that read body heat.
An infrared camera is about 110,000 of those point-and-shoot cameras. They're not shining a laser, they are waiting for the heat to hit them.
FLIR says its temperature screening devices, including a camera, have become more efficient through the years.
Now you're seeing more machine learning and artificial intelligence to help automate pieces of that screening process, which allows for faster throughput and consistent accuracy.
Instead of a camera, ThermalPass uses infrared sensors to read your body temperature.
There's no risk of it not measuring at all points in my body.
The company Cognitz offers an infrared and an optical sensor, along with a camera that not only screens body temperatures, but also detects whether someone is wearing a mask or keeping social distance.
So it becomes a completely automated platform.
While temperature-taking devices can be a deterrent to disease, health officials suggest more testing to diagnose COVID-19. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. With VOA Asia, also follow radio program hosts VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. The United Nations Human Rights Office in South Korea called on Tuesday for an impartial investigation into the killing of a fisheries official by North Korean troops at sea last month, as the man's family urged the UN to conduct its own probe. All of the big stories come your way through the day at VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. This is Business Scene. I'm Ira Melman. Travel restrictions are still in effect due to the COVID-19 pandemic, but customers of this cafe in Thailand are given a chance to pretend they're in the sky. Plane Cafe, located in the coastal city of Pattaya, is using a retired commercial airplane to allow customers to sit down in first-class styling seating while enjoying their coffee. The passengers are also able to take photographs by the overhead lockers and tour the cockpit. The experience is really starting to take off with customers who are itching to travel once again. Another cafe at the headquarters of the national carrier Thai Airways in Bangkok is serving airplane-style food such as spaghetti carbonara and Thai-style beef served on plastic trays by cabin crew. Intrawat Sinapachet is a customer there.
Normally, I'm a person who travels very often. And when we're forced to stay at home and when we cannot travel, it's kind of depressing. So when we have a hint of an experience of dining airline food, it's quite relaxing. It relieves what's missing.
While some customers see the cafes as a fun novelty, others see it as a genuine escape from travel bans the country has instated. At 0%, a trendy cocktail bar in Tokyo, all the drinks served are non-alcoholic. However, the bar is still somewhat of an anomaly in Japan, where drinking is popular and considered an important part of business culture. Mayumi Yamamoto, who started 0%, said she was inspired to offer better non-alcoholic drinks by her own experience as a teetotaler. Alongside alcohol-free cocktails, the bar also serves vegan-friendly food. Hideto Fujino, founder of Geekonomist Group, explains why bars such as 0% are fighting the stigma of the drinking culture in Japan's business scene.
The scenarios that are often talked about are things like a boss only takes out colleagues who can drink. Only those who can drink go out, and later they tell you, we didn't invite you because you don't drink. This really hurts.
0% is not exclusive to non-drinkers only. The cocktails have been enjoyed by customers who also drink alcohol but prefer to enjoy their drink over time and in a unique atmosphere. Yuto Takahashi says he enjoys the experience there.
Usually, I drink a lot of alcohol, but here I enjoy drinks more slowly. It's like I'm appreciating the atmosphere more. I like it very much.
Similar non-alcoholic bars in Japan are starting to appear more in the country's nightlife scene. The locations are being shared on Facebook groups. For Business Scene, I'm Ira Melman.
There is no current evidence that dogs can be infected. Hand washing after contact with all animals is recommended. This protects against other bacteria, such as E. coli and Salmonella, that can pass between animals and humans. For more information, visit www.who.int or www.cdc.gov.
A new horror film, Antebellum, by Gerard Bush and Christopher Renz, is the latest of several black horror films addressing race relations in the United States. VOA's Penelope Pulu has more.
In Antebellum, Veronica Henley, played by Janelle Monáe, is a self-assured academic and best-selling author who travels across America speaking about women's rights and racial inequality in the United States.
They're stuck in the past. We are the future.
A loving mother in an upper-class household, she feels secure in her world, until all of a sudden she doesn't. Veronica gets kidnapped and transported to a Louisiana plantation recreated as a replica of one from the 1800s. There, along with a large number of other African-Americans who have been abducted, she suffers atrocities. She's given a new name, and she is forbidden to speak. Antebellum filmmaker Gerard Bush tells VOA that this horror story came to him in an actual nightmare.
And it felt like this woman was screaming across dimensions for help, that this needed to be told, that I needed to get the truth out. That is the only way I can describe it.
Film critic Tim Gordon acknowledges the power that slavery evokes in Antebellum and as a theme in the black horror film genre.
I thought 12 Years a Slave, which I think is probably the platinum level of this genre, which tells this story, kind of did an amazing job.
But Gordon says black horror should focus more on the African-American experience in a modern setting.
Because I don't really think you got to go far to find the horror in the culture. You just have to be very attentive and be able to articulate it to audiences. Whether it's just the little slice, as there's a scene in Antebellum where they go to a restaurant and there's three of them and they try to seat them by the kitchen next to the dirty dishes.
Antebellum filmmaker Christopher Renz tells VOA that while his film focuses on slavery, its modern setting gives it a compelling twist. He says Jordan Peele's 2017 horror blockbuster, Get Out, where black people are held captive for medical experiments by white supremacists in today's America, set the stage for Antebellum.
I'm not sure if the reception would have been the same if Get Out had not happened and was not so successful.
Tim Gordon says Hollywood's embrace of black horror has helped it expand into streaming series, such as the Emmy-winning Watchmen, a fictional superhero drama based on a graphic novel where in an alternate universe, a female vigilante cop takes on white supremacists. And Lovecraft Country, a new HBO TV series that blends superhero, sci-fi, and horror genres set in the Jim Crow era.
Anything that Jordan Peele is producing and doing in Lovecraft Country, to me, are the epitomes of what this genre can be. And in both cases, they use just simple race in America and look at it and find the horrific elements to that.
Even so, film critic James Berardinelli says the topic of slavery remains central to the black film genre.
One of the most traumatic experiences for people of color in this country in the last 200 years is slavery and its aftermath.
Ultimately, says Berardinelli, like the Holocaust, slavery provides an inexhaustible supply of stories to be told on film. Antebellum filmmaker Christopher Renz agrees.
I think that everyone needs to constantly be reminded, and that's the only way that we will never forget and make sure that it never happens again. So I think there's room for a bunch of different stories. We're ready to tell a bunch of different stories.
Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
Now on VOA Asia. After 3,000 years, Tasmanian devils finally made their return to the wild in mainland Australia on September 10th, with the help of actor Chris Hemsworth, marking what's being called a monumental moment in rebuilding Australia's ecosystem. Libby Hogan reports.
The small black marsupials called Tasmanian devils are making a comeback to mainland Australia after a 3,000-year absence. It's believed dingoes wiped the devils out, whilst a contagious facial cancer reduced the devil population on the island state of Tasmania by up to 90%. But last month, they were brought back to a sanctuary in the state of New South Wales, thanks to intrepid conservationists and some superheroic help from actor Chris Hemsworth, better known as the hammer-swinging Thor.
We've laid some traps to catch the devils, and then we're going to release them out into the wild.
Correct. Yeah. They've had an incredible journey from Tasmania to make sure they're not disease-free before they turn up here.
Yep.
We've bred nearly 400 joeys, and we're at the point now that we're able to harvest some to return to wild and start and rebuild our ecosystems here.
That's Tim Faulkner, who runs the conservation group Aussie Arc.
Today marks the first time in 3,000 years or thereabouts that the Tasmanian devil has roamed mainland forests. And as an apex predator, it's critically important.
Now, 11 have been set loose in the sanctuary, with plans to release 20 more next year. Australia has the worst mammal extinction rate in the world, but Aussie Arc says bringing devils back to the mainland will help to rebalance the forest ecology, damaged by the introduction of invasive predators.
That was Reuters' Libby Hogan reporting. You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can find us on Instagram and YouTube at voanews.com. Thank you for being with us, and our thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Stay safe and enjoy the day ahead.